Well, we don't need a heater in here. We got packed up. Yeah. Lively furnace.
Energy conservation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because this is Bhagavad Gita month, right?
Yes.
And next week is, you know what? Gita Jayanti. I thought I'd speak something from Bhagavad Gita. And I thought a nice place to begin is going in a different direction for the same starting point as the earlier discussion on Bhagavad Gita at the Potomac Temple. I spoke there. The opening remark was something that's within a common experience for all of us is sometimes we wish to convey a very simple message, and we say it in very simple language, and the person we're trying to communicate with doesn't get it. So we try again, say it again, slightly different way, and they still don't get it. And we try it again, and they still don't get it. And something's going on where we're not really sure why they're not getting it. But a common reason why something like that happens is they don't want to get it. They've got another idea, and they're holding on to that other idea. And that's the case in Bhagavad Gita. Also, it's purposeful. Really? Just waiting for the next one to come out. I guess he's all right. Vyasadeva was not only the author of Bhagavad Gita, but he was a literary incarnation of Krishna. Yes? Shaktivesh Avatar. Yes? Question. How is it that Vyasadeva, after compiling all of the Vedas, did it in such a way that he felt something was missing? He felt a despondency or that pinch in the heart. Why? He's an incarnation of Krishna. We say, because by the internal potency, Krishna arranged it that way, so that Narada could come and so forth, and speak what Narada spoke, and then he could compile Srimad Bhagavatam that wouldn't have that same feeling of deficiency. He would feel complete. Saṁ siddhir haritoshanam yenātmā supraseedati. That very special literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. Or a similar question. Arjuna. Arjuna is not an ordinary personality. We're ordinary personalities. Arjuna is not an ordinary personality. He's one of Krishna's eternal associates. Wherever Krishna appears in his Bhoma Leela, Arjuna is there. Always. Can you give an example? Can you think of an example? I've scared you, I'm sorry. Do you know, have you heard of Nara Narayan Rishi. You heard that? Yes? Narayana is with Nara. Nara means human. So Nara Narayan Rishi is Narayana and Arjuna. Did you know that? Good. And when Krishna speaks in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, long, long ago I spoke this message to the sun god Devaswan, and Devaswan spoke it to his son, Manu, and Manu spoke it to his son, Ikshvaku. In this way, the knowledge was passed on to disciplic succession, but it was somehow broken, so I'm speaking to you again. So Arjun says, wait. Do that again, please, because you spoke this to sun god Devaswan. Devaswan is senior to both of us. We're only 100 and something years old, and the sun god was as old as the universe. How is it that you spoke this to the sun god Devaswan? And Krishna said, I spoke it. You were there too, but you don't remember. Because when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god Devaswan, Arjuna was also there. Those are two examples. And wherever Krishna is, there's Arjuna. Wherever Krishna is, there's Arjuna in his earthly pastimes. Arjuna is not one of us. He's a perfected being. So why is it that Arjuna got messed up and kind of couldn't figure out what his duty was? Right? He got confused. Because Krishna made that arrangement for Krishna to speak to Arjuna so that we could receive the message of Bhagavad Gita, because he wanted to deliver it to a perfect being. So he put Arjuna in this awkward position as if he was covered by Maya like us. It was a temporary arrangement of the internal potency. It's not the other kind. There's other examples. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Narada sees Brahma meditating. And he's puzzled because he says to Lord Brahma, I thought you were God. I mean, after all, you created the universe. But I see you meditating, so is there someone greater than you? Because otherwise, why are you meditating? That's logical, right? So, our commentators say, Narada knows perfectly well. He's not an ordinary being. In his previous life, he tells later, or excuse me, earlier in the second, the first canto, he was a perfected being in the previous day of Brahma. He was, when he was born from the body of Lord Brahma, he was already a perfected being. He didn't have to go to Gurukul. He was perfected being, right from the get-go, because he was from his previous life. So how does Narada become bewildered and think that Brahma is God? And the answer is, by the arrangement of the internal potency of the personality of Godhead. These aren't, you know, when we do some things, we get confused. That's not the internal potency. That's the other kind. But Arjuna is taking that position to instruct us. And it's specific also for the juncture of Krishna appears at the end of Dwarapa Yuga, the previous Yuga. When Krishna departs, that marks the end of Dwarapa Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga, right? So the Bhagavad Gita is for us, the fellows here in Kali Yuga. It's easy and it's approachable, and you have to hear it in disciplic succession, otherwise you're not going to understand it. But if you receive it in disciplic succession, it's the ABC of spiritual knowledge. In that ABC of spiritual knowledge, Bhagavad Gita, there's a there's a position that Arjuna takes three times where he doesn't get it. And the reason he doesn't get it, I've already explained, he's got another idea. He doesn't want to get it. But he's taking the position of somebody in Kali Yuga, a would-be spiritualist, a so-called spiritualist, that doesn't get it, but likes to consider themselves a spiritualist. And what's that position that Arjuna was taking? Karma sannyas, right? Yes? What does karma sannyas mean?
A person who is bewildered but thinks that they know.
What does karma mean?
Action and reaction.
Action and reaction. And sannyas means?
No.
Renunciation. Arjuna wanted to give up his prescribed duty. What was his prescribed duty? He was a kshatriya. To protect, not just fight, you know, protect. If fighting is necessary, if talking is necessary, whatever is necessary, protect. And if fighting is necessary, then fighting. So even Krishna tried some other means to bring a peaceful solution. Right? He came as a messenger on behalf of the Pandavas. Krishna, you know, he was a message carrier. He was the subordinate to the Pandavas. That's really nice. That's Krishna. He's very affectionate to his devotees. He's Bhaktavatsala. Bhaktavatsala means one who is very affectionate and kind to his devotee. That's a nice name of Krishna to remember. Bhaktavatsala. So, Arjuna was taking the position of karma sannyas. He wanted to give up his duty. And he had this reason and that reason, the other reason and the other reason, and seven reasons. They all sounded really good. These, you know, when I first time I read Bhagavad Gita, they sounded pretty good. Like morality, and he's concerned about the protection of women, and not killing, especially the, you know, when I first read it was during the Vietnamese War, and thought, wow, that, you know, I follow Arjuna. No fighting. But then Krishna, after he submitted to Krishna, and Krishna explained chapter 2 Bhagavad Gita about Sankhya, the difference between spirit and matter, and then Buddhi Yoga, acting with one singular focus upon achieving the soul's ultimate real purpose of serving the personality of Godhead, with singular purpose. Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. And so many nice verses, karma nivadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. Everyone knows that verse. Most people know that verse. The older devotees know the verse, I know that. Kids may not have learned that one. They learned Sarvadharmam Parityaja. You know that verse? No? Okay. So, Krishna is saying, you're entitled, you have the adhikar, you have the qualification, you have the right to perform your prescribed duty. But you're not entitled to the fruit of your prescribed duty. Nor should you ever be attached to not performance of your duty. Nor should you ever consider that you're inducing others to act. You're not the cause of the fruit. You're not entitled to enjoy the fruit. You're not inducing others to act. And never be attached, this is the chapter 5 is, says this, and never be attached to non-performance of duty. So there's, you know, one yes and three no's. So Arjuna doesn't, he sees the fruit of doing his duty as a kshatriya as being very bad fruit. So he's attached to not performance of his duty, karma sannyas. Question. Oh, Bhagavad Gita scholars here, since it's Gita month. Those who follow the path of karma sannyas, what's their goal? What's the goal of karma sannyas? Anyone?
Higher pleasures.
Material world.
Huh?
Stay here. Material world.
That's their goal, is to stay here.
Detached from material.
Yeah. But so if I'm detached from the material, what's my goal?
Liberation.
Yes. And a specific kind of liberation. There's five kinds of liberation. It's, you know, the numero uno kind. Sayuja. What does Sayuja mean? You know the meaning? Sayuja?
The impersonal liberation.
Yes. Merging with Sayuja, becoming one with, entering into the Brahman effulgence, that kind. There's four other kinds. Samipya, Saropya, Salokya, Sarupya. Having a form like the Lord, having a residence in the planet of the Lord, being an associate of the Lord, having opulences like the Lord. Those are Vaishnava liberations. They want this other one. Karma sannyas. The goal is entering into the Brahman effulgence. So if you stop material activity, karma sannyas, then at least the notion is I won't be entangled. But I have to have a positive activity or some kind of activity, so I'm going to meditate on the impersonal feature of the Supreme. That's their program. So I'm going to read the verses. Okay. The end of chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3. In chapter 2, Krishna has explained Sankhya Yoga and then Bodhi Yoga. Correct? The beginning part is continue from the first chapter, his, you know, reasons why I don't want to fight and what should I do, Krishna? I surrender to you. Then Sankhya, analysis of matter and spirit, and you fall in the category of spirit. Then Bodhi, how to act with intelligence, keeping intelligence, focus upon Krishna. So Arjuna is thinking, yes, intelligence. I'll go to the forest and do karma sannyas and give up this awful activity. Battlefield, killing, fighting, soldiers being killed, women being unprotected, forget it. Karma sannyas, meditate on Brahman with my full intelligence. So Krishna says, a person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. That is the way of spiritual godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. If one is situated even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So Krishna is saying, Bodhi. And Arjuna saying, yes. But why are you pointing to the battlefield and saying, go and fight? So he says, oh Janardana, oh Keshava, why do you want me to engage in this ghastly warfare? Got a nice adjective. Gore Karmane. Even sounds like the word gore. Like gory. Like bloody, gory. ghastly warfare. If you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work. Intelligence is better than fruitive work. He said it in the whole chapter 2. Intelligence is better than fruitive work. But what is that intelligence? It's not karma sannyas and go meditate on Brahman. Chant om, go live in a cave somewhere. Chant om, meditate on Brahman. It's another kind of application of intelligence. It's the intelligence that he's described here and describes elsewhere also. The dami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupiyanti te. The intelligence of how to practically engage your whatever it is that Krishna has given you, whatever ability, intelligence, strength, asset, resource, something, human form of life, senses, mind, fully engaged in Krishna's service exclusively. That's buddhi. Arjuna is thinking something else. I want out of here. I want to let go. I want to terminate my material annihilate material existence because it's too troublesome and become one with the Supreme Brahman. That's not Arjuna. He's a devotee of Krishna. He's taking that position so that we can understand that's the wrong position. Krishna is having him do that. Because it's popular. It's not only popular 5,000 years ago, it's popular. I can say that from experience, you know, just going here and there in audiences that aren't trained in reading Prabhupada's books. There's two main ideas. Do religious activity so you can prosper in this life and go to the heavenly planets. That's one common idea. Very common. And if that's not the idea, it's ultimately everything is one. That's the other idea. And it's rare. Very rare. Bahunam jamanamante gyanavan mam prapadyate vasudev sarvamiti samahatmasa durlabha. Very rare to find. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Very rare to find someone that... And it's not just today, Kali Yuga. It's Krishna saying that 5,000 years ago. Pure devotion is special. That's the message of Bhagavad Gita. Some people read Bhagavad Gita and get the other message. Yes. Merge with the Brahman. Arjuna is taking that position. So Krishna does it again. He answers Arjuna's question. This isn't ghastly. This isn't a ghastly activity or karma. It's karma yoga and detached work. Karma pala tyag. Pala means fruit. Fruit. Recognize the word pala. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Krishna says, "Offer me a fruit, flower, leaf, and water." Pala. Karma pala means the fruit of work. Karma pala tyag. Renouncing the fruits of one's work. Same as that second chapter verse I quoted. You're entitled to the performance of your duty. You're not entitled to the fruits of your duty. What do you do with the fruits? You offer them to the Supreme. Karma yoga. So he explains the whole thing. On the basis of Sankhya, our real identity is spirit soul. We can't refrain from doing something even for a moment. We're spirit soul. We're active. And souls animate bodies, and bodies do something. You can't do nothing. And as soon as you do something, there's reaction, because that was your definition of karma, action and reaction, right? There's bondage for your activity. So what do you do? Offer the fruit to the Supreme. Sacrifice unto the Supreme. Yajna by Vishnu. And he explains all that. And transcendental knowledge follows that, chapter 4. And Arjuna's thinking, yes, transcendental knowledge. Go to the forest. Sit in a cave. Read Vedanta Sutra. Chant Om. Develop knowledge. Just be situated in knowledge. And again, at the end of chapter 4, Krishna points to the battlefield. Armed with knowledge, stand and fight. So, chapter 5, Arjuna says it again. Oh Krishna, first of all, you ask me to renounce work. He didn't ask him to renounce work. He asked him to renounce the fruits of work. How come he didn't hear it? He got beans in his ears. He's got some other idea. He didn't ask him to renounce work. He asked him to renounce the fruits of work, very clearly. Do your work. Do your prescribed duty, but not entitled to the fruits of your work. And then you say renounce fruits of work, and then you recommend work and devotion. Will you kindly tell me, definitely, which of the two is more beneficial? Straightforward answer. He gets a straightforward question. He gets a straightforward answer. Work and devotion is better. And he asks it again. In chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita. And then it's specific. It's not just about work. It's the object of meditation. Arjuna asks, please tell me, definitely, which is better? Worshipping your impersonal feature or your personal feature? Which are considered to be more perfect? Those who are always properly engaged in devotional service or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? Very straightforward question. He gets a very straightforward answer. Personality God has said, those who fix their minds on my personal form are always engaged in worshiping me with great and transcendental faith and are considered to be, by me, to be most perfect. Couldn't be more clear. It's repeated when you're trying to explain something to someone. Prabhupada speaks like this. Sometimes it's on purpose. You repeat something, so it's really clear. You may repeat it from a different angle, different perspective, but for sake of clarity and for sake of importance. Prabhupada certainly did like that. I'll just add this into the mix here, but something that I heard Prabhupada say personally, you know, from the Vyasa-san, Prabhupada said, one of the primary duties of a spiritual master is to explain repeatedly to the disciples the abject futility of trying to find happiness through fruitive activity. I'll say it again. I'm sure you got it, but I'll say it again for emphasis. One of the primary duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly explain to his disciple the abject futility of seeking happiness through fruitive activity. Because it's that fruitive activity that keeps us bound in karma, both the action and the reaction portion of karma. Right? Because as soon as we do something that's with fruitive intention, it binds us to reaction that inspires us to do more fruitive activity. That brings a reaction to inspire us to do more fruit. And we're just on the samsara wheel. Bound. And have you noticed, I've noticed, I'm sure you've noticed, that we take that tendency with us into the arena of devotional service. Of doing something because there's some expectation of what's in it for me, kind of happiness. When the teaching of bhakti is for Krishna. Everything for Krishna, everything belongs to Krishna, so everything is for Krishna, and his happiness is my happiness. That's bhakti. And we somehow want to keep some fruitive activity program going on while we're doing devotional service. It's not a surprise. It's our material conditioning. So it's really important to get a message that's repeated several times. It's the meditation upon that where you fix your mind while engaged in devotional service. Like, you know, the interest is We want to distribute many Bhagavad Gitas. Yay! We want to distribute many Bhagavad Gitas. So that Krishna is pleased. One of the things that devotees learn when distributing books. How many of you have spent time besides sponsoring Gitas going out and distributing Gitas? Very good. One of the things that you learn is detachment. Isn't it? Oh, if you don't learn detachment, it hurts. Someone was describing to me just today, you know, we went out and we knocked on so many doors and people just slammed the door in our face. And it was cold, and I was thinking, maybe we should go where it's warm and not get the door slammed in my face. They were very rude. But then I thought, that's not the platform of devotional service. I should be doing this whether it's cold or not cold, whether they're opening the door, inviting us in or not. This is for my purification, and Krishna will be pleased that we're making this sacrifice for Him. And you know what? The next three doors, they invited us in, and they bought a bunch of books. You know, so I said, so that made you happy, right? Yeah, it made me happy. But that kind of happiness isn't the best kind of happiness. The real happiness is that whether it's a yes or a no. Our one of our slogans, not slogans, our personal mottos was the endeavor is perfection. Trying to please Krishna is perfection. And you learn that through book distribution. It's a wonderful teacher. There's many other services that's a wonderful teacher. Be a temple president for a while and see what that's like. And, you know, it's a thankless task. Anyway, we'll go there. do anything. Cook the Sunday feast, or you know, serve out the prasadam, or clean up after the feast, or wash the pots, or something. Some devotional service. And just do it because it's for the pleasure of Krishna. Not the other things. Just that. And that's the lesson that we need to learn. I'll just do a little anecdotal thing and stop. But I had some very good fortune when I was a very new devotee. In fact, the first day that I was a college student once upon a time, and I was going to Boston to consider enrolling in graduate school in Boston, because there's so many nice universities, and there were some friends that went with me, so. And while I was there, I thought, I'd like to visit the temple, because where I was a student at the university, there was a little preaching center, but this was like a temple with deities, and so I went. And it's a long story, but it was a special event that evening. Brahmananda Prabhu had just come back from being with Prabhupada for a month or so, and he had all these Prabhupada stories to tell. And I don't know if any of you have met Brahmananda, but he's a big devotee in more ways than one. And then he was certainly a lot younger, but he was big. And he was radiating just from having been with Prabhupada, because he loved Prabhupada. He loves Prabhupada. He was so happy. He was radiating like a 150-watt bulb. I mean, he was really happy. And the kirtan, because everyone came because they wanted to hear Prabhupada's stories, the kirtan was, you know, they were bouncing off the ceiling of the walls. And I was this, you know, college kid wondering, what's going on here? And then at the end of the kirtan, Brahmananda sat down on a little seat and a little tiny lectern, like, you know, really small, and he had this big body, and I was just like, well, wow, what's going to happen here? And he just was radiating these wonderful stories of Prabhupada, and the devotees were swooning and ooing and aahing and Prabhupada, and there was such love for Prabhupada, and the choicest part was he was describing Prabhupada negotiating with the Japanese businessman in Dainapan on the price for printing Krishna book, and he was so happy to, you know, describe how Prabhupada outsmarted the men. There were five of them, because he anyway, I can't remember exactly, but the part, the gist of it was, they were cultured, but they were businessmen, and Prabhupada, being a sannyasi, he put forward his spiritual position, and as they moved, he moved, and the price became a very good price, and Prabhupada then, you know, signed the document on that new price. And they were astonished that he did like that, and they also signed. So it was done at a very good price, and Prabhupada was happy. So I thought, wow, this is a nice place. And so I went back to finish my undergraduate studies, and when graduation time came, I just got in my car and, you know, beeline, made it right to the Boston Temple, because that was where he had come, the Boston Temple. And when I got there, it was a Sunday night, late at night, and I was really hungry, and they saw me, because I had been there just visiting once, and they said, oh, you're right on time, we have all these pots that have to be washed. Little devotional service. So I was up till really late. I was really hungry, but I just washed the pots. And then got a little leftover prasadam afterwards, late at night. And the temple commander said, oh, you did such a good job of washing the pots. This can be your service, washing the pots. And I was thinking, I was a proud college student thinking, you know, I'm going to be going to medical school, and, you know, I can do a lot more than wash pots. Don't they know who I am? I didn't say it. I just felt that. So I just was given the service of all day long washing pots. Didn't want to wash pots all day long. And then, make it worse, the location of the pot sink was right where everybody came down the stairs from the ashram on their way out to go on Sankirtan. And they'd pat me on the back and say, oh, you're doing a great job. I want to go on Sankirtan. And then they said, Prabhupada said, when you cleanse the pots, you're cleansing your heart. And I, being a smart aleck, sarcastic-minded college student, I thought to myself, well, why don't you stand next to me and help me finish? I didn't say it, I just thought about it. And, but then I started meditating on the instruction of Prabhupada. You know, got a little over that thing, ego thing. Prabhupada gave this instruction. Let me apply myself to the instruction. And I felt I was getting purified. I felt my heart was becoming freed from that egoism of who I think I am, the upadhi of blah, blah, blah. And it was purifying. And then they gave another instruction. Oh, you know what else Prabhupada said? You should clean the pots so carefully that you could see yourself like a mirror at the bottom of the pot. And this was the time when we didn't have any money, so we had all these used old pots that were black as black could be at the bottom. So I just surrendered and said, okay, Prabhupada said, you know, I should just serve the instruction of the spiritual master. And it took weeks to get all that black off the bottom of the pot so you could see your reflection in the bottom of the pot. On the bottom of the pot. Old pots. The very day that you could, they were, I was getting so many pats on the back. You're doing a great job, and I think I should not do such a good job because I want to go on Sankirtan. But when I finally reached that position, the temple president, Sat Stuart Marsh was the president at the time. He was a grihastha at the time. He said, we have someone else that came and they can do the pots. Why don't you go? Would you like to go on Sankirtan? Yay! And I understood the message that I've been trying to communicate here to all of you this evening is just take the instruction to heart and live according to that instruction, and everything desirable come from that. Even whether you like it, don't like it. That's not the consideration. The instruction is the consideration. So when Krishna says something, you're entitled to the fruits of, you're entitled to perform your prescribed duty, but not the fruits of your work. Fix your mind upon me in my transcendental form. Engage in your devotional service and always think of me. It's simple. Another place he says. These two things. Always engage in your prescribed duty and always think of me. So, follow the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. Everything, 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 even the little things, everything will follow. Okay, so may you reach your goals of distributing so many Bhagavad Gitas. And may you also read the Bhagavad Gita and follow the wonderful teachings found in Bhagavad Gita and achieve the real goal of life. Srila Prabhupada ki. So, chapter 6. Any question or two? Comments? Looks like Prashadam is ready. Yes?
What was Arjuna's state of mind after the battle? And did Krishna have to instruct him to change?
He was somewhat like Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira was very deeply lamenting. I'm the cause of the death of so many persons, how horrible. That, you know, mood. He was feeling guilty for sin, causing the death of so many people, abominable thing. And Arjuna was, to some degree, sharing that. You know, he was his elder brother. He wasn't as deeply absorbed, as far as I can understand from the Mahabharata, but he and the other Pandavas felt. And especially when he saw Grandfather Bhishma lying in the bed of arrows. Horrible. Great pain. To see their grandfather suffering like that. He who had treated them, he had raised them like his own children. But Grandfather Bhishma pacified them all. Yeah? Prabhupada speaks both ways in Bhagavad Gita about Arjuna's reluctance. One is this is the natural sentiment of compassion of Vaishnava. He didn't want to bring pain, misery, suffering, harm, hurt to others. But, you know, the other is he was refraining, he was bewildered because of thinking, how can I enjoy the fruit if those who I would want to enjoy the fruit with are gone now, and we killed them to get the fruit. You know, how can I be the enjoyer? So, to some extent, there's appreciation, and to some extent, there's some criticism. Because the mentality had to be, you know, faulty, non-performance of duty. The fault was attachment to a position of being an enjoyer of the fruit. It didn't look like I'd be the enjoyer of the fruit, so I don't want to do my duty. Anything else? Okay. Yes.
In regards to understanding the how fruitive tendency comes into devotional service.
How we come to devotional service?
Yeah, question. Example, in, to confirm if that is fruitive or not. Like, let us say, I take charanamritam thinking that by taking charanamritam I'll get purified. But the direct connection is not there. That or by getting purified I can serve Krishna, please Krishna. That connection is not there. That is what is called fruitive.
Well, it's non-fruitive is where Krishna is at the center. Mode of goodness is what you described. The mode of goodness is not Shuddha. Shuddha is Krishna is at the center. This is Kapila Dev's teaching in the third canto of Bhagavatam to Devahuti. Devotional service that's in the mode of goodness is the contemplation, I will do this because it will purify me. Devotional service in the mode of goodness. And then there's devotional service that's unmixed. Okay? So, minimally, it's a good aspiration. I'd like to become pure. So I can be Krishna's instrument. Until I become pure, it's dull. Not good instrument. Let me become pure. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maharaj Ki.
Yeah.